the country because of miscalculations about the recent developments. The number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces and settlers in the occupied West Bank since Wednesday rises to 3. And French oil workers' unions join other major trade unions in calling for strikes in response to the government's pension reform plan. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says their enemies made miscalculations when hatching plots to fuel the recent riots and to create disruption in the country. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the enemies tapped into all their available resources to plunge the country into chaos and turmoil. He said they cashed in on people's livelihood issue as the country's economic situation was not very good. The leader added, among other techniques that the enemies employed to stoke unrest, were to sneak espionage teams into Iran, to promote Iranophobia worldwide through various propaganda ploys, and to incite ethnic, religious, political, and even personal sentiments. However, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that they failed to pull it off, despite all of their schemes, because of their miscalculations and Iran's firm resolve. Ayatollah Khamenei made comments in a meeting with eulogists. Iranian university students and political activists gathered in front of the French embassy in Tehran to once again denounce a French magazine's insult to Muslim sanctities and Iran's religious and national values. Our correspondent Gisumi Shahmadi tells us more.
The street in front of the French embassy in Tehran once again became the scene of angry protests. This time, a group of Iranian activists and university students gathered to denounce the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo's insulting cartoons affronting Iran's highest religious and political figures. The protesters chanted slogans condemning the Paris-based publication. They call on France not to allow publishing insults at the sanctities of Muslims under the guise of freedom of expression. This young lady did not mince her words condemning Charlie Hebdo and its insults, a stance echoed by every single protester.
We are here on behalf of all Muslim students in response to the insulting cartoons published by the Charlie Hebdo magazine. We are here to express our anger.
Our red lines have been crossed. We will by no means tolerate such acts, and we are here to make this very clear.
We should boycott all French products to teach them a lesson. They should not allow themselves to insult our values.
This rally comes after Iran's foreign ministry summoned the French ambassador to Tehran to object the insulting act. The protesters questioned the West's so-called freedom of speech and free media's absolute values. This university student says even the most vociferous free speech advocates agreed that the right to freedom of expression is not absolute and requires certain considerations, especially when it tends to incite hatred and offend religious values.
Those who are taking part in this demonstration say it is not the first time that Charlie Hebdo has taken on this kind of adventurism. It seems that the magazine feeds on hatred and hostility and crosses the red line of decency every time. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Israeli brutalities against Palestinians show no sign of abating. The regime forces have killed one more Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The victim has been identified as 41-year-old Samir Oni Harbi Aslan. The incident happened early on Thursday when Israeli troops raided the Qalandia refugee camp north of the city of Al-Quds. Family and friends gathered at a hospital morgue to mourn his death. In reaction to the killing, the resistance movement Hamas said that Palestinians will continue to resist the Tel Aviv regime until their land is liberated. The killing comes just one day after an Israeli settler fatally shot a 19-year-old Palestinian near the city of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Also on Wednesday, Israeli troops reportedly shot another young Palestinian man in the head during a raid on the Balata refugee camp. He later succumbed to his injury. Our correspondent Mona Kandil says the Israeli raid of the Qalandia refugee camp in the occupied West Bank is yet another act of violence against Palestinians.
This time, Israeli forces have raided Qalandia refugee camp between Al-Quds and Ramallah to conduct arrests among Palestinians as usual. During this operation, Israeli forces raided the narrow streets of Qalandia refugee camp and arrested from Qalandia 12 Palestinians, including the son of this Palestinian martyr, 17-year-old Ramzi Aslan. The Israelis wanted to arrest him, and here his father tried to prevent the Israeli soldiers from brutally taking his son and from beating him. However, Israeli forces opened fire at the father, Samir Aslan, and they stripped him from his clothes and left him on the ground. He was bleeding. A number of soldiers were around him. And it was, according to the footage that we have received, the Israeli soldiers were surrounding Aslan and left him bleeding until he succumbed to his injuries. Today, 18 Palestinians were arrested by the Israeli forces, as I have mentioned. A dozen of them were arrested in the Qalandia refugee camp, and the remaining were arrested in the Dahesh refugee camp in Bethlehem. In addition to one Palestinian was detained by the Israeli forces during a raid to Qalqilia, northern the occupied West Bank.
Doctors and medical experts in Yemen believe that Saudi Arabia and its coalition forces are using biological weapons, which are believed to be the reason for the increased cancer and birth defect cases in Yemen. Yusuf Mari has the special story.
Sana is dying. She was born just a few days ago, but because of a rare birth malformation, doctors believe she only has a few days to live. Sana is one of the thousands of Yemeni babies facing a similar fate. Here in the Sab'een Hospital in the Yemeni capital, doctors say they have been receiving birth defect cases at an alarming rate since 2015. That's when the Saudi-led coalition launched its war on Yemen. Doctors here are convinced that biological weapons were employed by the Saudis.
We've received many birth defect cases throughout the years. However, this is the first time we received a case like this. She does not have the bottom limbs or kidneys or even a urinary tract or liver. She's missing all of her bottom half organs. Malformation cases have risen significantly since 2015. We believe the rise in these cases is due to the hazardous poisons from the weapons being used in the war.
Cancer cases are also on the rise. The spokesperson for Yemen's Ministry of Health says that the data and statistics recorded since the war started indicate that biological weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition are the main cause of the steady increase in cancer and birth defects.
These cases are rising in the areas that were targeted by illegal weapons in a number of provinces in Yemen, which has led to a significant increase of various kinds of cancer cases and also birth defects and miscarriages. It was never like this prior to the war.
We visited the registration office at Yemen's only oncology center. It was packed with people pushing their way to register for cancer treatment.
I am here to register for medication. I have oral cancer.
I have just received another case. The person who just registered is from Ebb and has liver cancer.
According to Yemen's Ministry of Health, the number of cancer patients increased by more than 50% since the war was launched in 2015. The Yemeni Ministry of Health says it will form a committee to officially investigate the main cause for the increase in birth defects and cancer cases in the areas that have been hit the most by the Saudi airstrikes. Even if it's evident that prohibited weapons were utilized by Saudi Arabia and its coalition forces, it is unlikely they will face prosecution, since most of the weapons used in the war are supplied by the American and British governments.
Doctors and medical experts say the increase in cancer and birth defect cases is rooted in the 8-year Saudi-led war that has polluted Yemen's air, water, and food. They blame the Saudi-led coalition's use of prohibited weapons such as biological weapons, toxic gases, and cluster bombs. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
French oil workers' unions have called for strikes against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reform plan. A senior official representing the CGT Union Federation says the walkouts are planned for January 19 and 26, as well as February 6. The industrial actions, he said, would shut down refineries, reduce output and deliveries. Trade unions had warned about a tense period ahead if the government does not heed their calls. They are against the government's proposal to raise the legal retirement age by 2 years to 64. They're also opposed to faster increases in the minimum number of years of contributions required to receive full pensions. The announcement follows Wednesday's calls for walkouts in the transport sector. France witnessed several protests last year against the reforms made by Macron. The UK royal Prince Harry has caused anger and upset after revealing in his new book that he killed 25 Afghans during his military service in the formerly UK-occupied country. British Muslims are especially outraged, with many prominent community members now demanding for him to stand trial for war crimes. Rob Carter reports.
The UK's rogue royal Prince Harry has come under fire both at home and abroad after admitting he killed 25 Afghans during his military service. In his highly controversial memoir, Spare, Harry claims he killed 25 people during his two tours of occupied Afghanistan, adding he didn't think of them as people, but instead as chess pieces that had been taken off the board. Harry served as an attack helicopter pilot between 2012 and 2013. The book alleges that all the targets were combatants. However, following furious protests from inside Afghanistan, many British establishment critics have condemned the revelation, believing that it creates a new and unnecessary security threat against his own family members.
Amid the condemnation, British Muslims feel particularly outraged.
I don't think Harry should be silenced for what he said. In fact, I think he should be encouraged to go into more detail about the ideology and the training that's being pumped into British soldiers. It's not even the first time that he's likened killing humans with playing games. In 2013, he said it was a joy to use his controller during airstrikes. He said it was like playing a PlayStation or an Xbox.
Afghans are also furious, with many, including Taliban officials, issuing demands for Harry to be put on trial for war crimes.
The consensus in Afghanistan, and amongst probably Muslim opinion all around the world, is that he was involved in a war where hundreds of thousands of innocent Afghans were killed, a nation was destroyed, millions were displaced, and therefore he is a war criminal who should be accounted for his crimes. I run a British Muslim website, and we did an online poll the other day, and it had about 5,000 votes. It was a one-day poll, and 85% of our readers and viewers said that Prince Harry was a war criminal. And that's because Muslims, you know, we consider ourselves one body. And if one part of the body hurts, the whole of the body hurts.
Many British Muslims are left questioning how they now view a royal family with Muslim blood on its hands. Robert Carter, London.
Rights advocacy groups have renewed their calls for the closure of the U.S.-run infamous Guantanamo Bay prison, which has a colossal legacy of abuse. On the 21st anniversary of the opening of the notorious facility, some 160 international rights groups have sent a joint letter to U.S. President Joe Biden, urging him to shut it down. The facility is a symbol of Washington's so-called war on terror and is globally known for widespread violations of human rights there. Some detainees released from there, and even U.S. personnel, had recounted harrowing stories of torture, including waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and force feeding. One rights group has described the prison as a symbol of injustice and disregard for the rule of law. The prison has never been closed, despite promises by respective American presidents. Director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Tim Anderson, joined us earlier with his take on as to why respective U.S. presidents failed to shut down the infamous Guantanamo Bay prison.
That's right. The Congress has had a strong say in it. The presidents, Obama and Biden, have talked about closing it, but claim that there's some obstacle there. And part of that obstacle is in Congress. But I think in reality, it suits the deep state in the U.S. to have this facility outside the law, outside any sort of law, to be able to use it as a type of a jailing of people, which they've used other countries. We know there's this question of sending people around for torture in other countries where the type of rights that might apply within the US jurisdiction don't apply there. So clearly it suits them to keep it open and they're keeping it up their sleeve for future reference, basically. It certainly costs a lot of money to have 35 people there. It's not about that. It's about having this an extra tool that is not subject to scrutiny, not subject to the law. That's the way they like it.
The United States says attacks in space would invoke its defense treaty with Japan, as the two countries are alarmed over China's rapid advances in space technology.
We're working to deepen our cooperation across every realm, land, sea, air, and yes, space, cyber, and outer. The outer space component of this is important to the security and prosperity of our alliance. We agreed, as you've heard, that attacks to, from, or within space present a clear challenge. And we affirmed that, depending on the nature of those attacks, this could lead to the invocation of Article 5.
Washington has also announced the deployment of a more agile marine unit on Japan's southern island of Okinawa. That is part of recent high-level talks between officials of the two countries and a joint statement to modernize their defense alliance. U.S. officials said on Wednesday that the country would also increase its anti-ship missile capabilities in Japan. Tokyo last month unveiled plans for its biggest military buildup since World War II. Tensions have been on the rise between China and the U.S. over a host of issues. Beijing is opposed to the U.S. military presence in the region, as well as its nexus with Taiwan, which China claims as part of its territory. China has repeatedly warned that the Western troop presence puts the regional security at risk. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. This bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
To Palestinians and their allies, U.S. hypocrisy is palpable. The United States selectively criticizes some countries for their human rights violations, but pointedly ignores the Zionist regime's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory and its commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity against the Palestinian people. 2 years after launching an investigation of war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Palestine, the ICC is still dragging its feet because of U.S. pressures. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. The website of Truth Out wrote, "Nearly 2 years have passed since the International Criminal Court, ICC, began investigating war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in the occupied West Bank, including East Al-Quds and Gaza. But the ICC has yet to take concrete steps to move the investigation forward. Frustrated with the glacial pace of the ICC's investigation and the lack of clarity about how and when the investigation will proceed, three Palestinian human rights organizations issued a joint statement to the Assembly of States parties to the Rome Statute, the management body of the ICC, on December 6, saying, "We have not seen any concrete step in this investigation, no action by the prosecutor to break the vicious cycle of impunity." They added, "The situation on the ground is deteriorating year after year, month after month, day after day. We feel that we have been left alone in our struggle, and Palestinian victims are losing hope. The initial news of the ICC investigation came on March 3, 2021, when Fatou Bensouda, then chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court ICC, announced the opening of a formal investigation into war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in the West Bank, including East Al-Quds and Gaza Strip, during and since the Zionist regime's 2014 Operation Protective Edge, which killed 2,251 Palestinians. Following a five-year preliminary examination, Bensouda found a reasonable basis to believe that Israeli regime forces had committed the war crimes of willful killing, willfully causing serious injury, disproportionate use of force, and transfer of Israelis into Palestinian territory. Bensouda also found there was a reasonable basis to investigate possible war crimes by the Zionist regime forces, including intentional attacks against Palestinian people. The three Palestinian human rights organizations that issued a joint statement this month to raise concerns about the lack of progress in the ICC investigation are the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, a group that protects human rights and promotes the rule of law in accordance with international standards, Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights, a group that protects human rights, especially economic, social, and cultural rights, in the occupied Palestinian territory, and Al-Haq, which documents human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territory. In 2021, the opening of an investigation by the prosecutor was perceived as a huge leap forward, the groups wrote in their joint statement. After years of frustration, we hope that it was the start of a new era of accountability for the grave crimes committed in the occupied Palestine. This year alone, the three groups added, more than 200 Palestinians, including many children, were killed by Israel's settler colonial regime in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. The Palestinian human rights organizations noted that beloved Palestinian Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Aghla was assassinated in cold blood by an Israeli sniper in broad daylight, and six prominent Palestinian civil society organizations, including Al-Haq, were shut down after being falsely designated as terrorist organizations. In spite of these events, the three organizations wrote the ICC's Office of the Prosecutor hasn't issued a single statement concerning Palestine. They contrasted the ICC's prosecutor inaction on Palestine with the situation of Ukraine, about which the Office of the Prosecutor has been very proactive. It is also crucial that the same level of attention, activity, and resources is applied to other situations, including Palestine, to avoid perceptions of selectively and politicization, the groups wrote. Victims should not be competing for justice, and double standards should not have a place in justice, they said. Truth Out wrote in this regard, on November 21st, Bezalel Smotrich, head of the Zionist regime's far-right religious Zionism party, called Palestinian human rights organizations an existential threat to Israel. He said that the incoming Israeli regime government must take legal and security measures against them, including seizing their funds. 2 days later, 198 Palestinian, regional, and international civil society organizations, including the National Lawyers Guild, Center for Constitutional Rights, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and International Association of Democratic Lawyers wrote an open letter to Chief ICC Prosecutor Karim Khan, decrying missed opportunities for preventive statements in the past year. The CSO cited the Zionist regime's killing of Palestinians without clear provocation, as well as raids and assaults against worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque and at Haram al-Sharif in occupied East Al-Quds. Three of the six designated terrorist organizations, the CSOs noted, have been providing the ICC Prosecutor's Office with information about serious crimes committed by Israeli nationals within the jurisdiction of the court. The CSOs cited the Apartheid Convention, which lists as an inhuman act of apartheid the persecution of organizations and persons by depriving them of fundamental rights and freedoms because they oppose apartheid. The CSOs wrote that, although Israel's targeting of these organizations could hinder the work of the ICC, there has been no public reaction by your office. The CSO urged the office of the prosecutor to publicly condemn and call on Israel to rescind the terrorist designations, publicly affirm that the office of the prosecutor will scrutinize Israel's crimes during its unprovoked military offensive in August 2022, urgently expedite the ICC investigation into the situation of Palestine, including the crimes committed against humanity of apartheid and persecution, and finally, issue preventive statements to deter the Zionist regime's crimes against humanity and war crimes. The Zionist regime's Prime Minister-designate Benjamin Netanyahu is assembling Israel's most extreme right-wing government to date. Attorney Diana Bhutto, former advisor to the negotiating team of Palestine Liberation Organization, wrote in an op-ed in New York Times, Netanyahu's government will likely be receptive to Smotrich's suggestion to persecute Palestinian human rights organizations even more severely than the prior government that designated them terrorists and shut down their offices. Moreover, the chief enabler of the Zionist regime's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory, the U.S. government, which annually provides the Zionist regime with $3.8 billion in military aid, is implicitly exerting pressure on Khan to drag his feet on the ICC investigation of the Zionist regime crimes. When U.S. President Joe Biden visited Al-Quds in July, he and the Zionist regime Prime Minister Yair Lapid concluded an agreement affirming they would continue to work together to combat all efforts to unfairly single Israel out in any forum, including at the UN or International Criminal Court. Although the United States refuses to join the ICC, it has consistently tried to undermine it, expressing serious concerns about the ICC's attempts to exercise its jurisdiction over Israeli regime personnel. But on March 15th, 100 U.S. senators, who find it difficult to agree on anything, unanimously passed SR 546, which encourages member states to petition the ICC or other appropriate international tribunal to take any appropriate steps to investigate war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by other countries. To Palestinians and their allies, U.S. hypocrisy is palpable. The United States selectively criticizes some countries for their human rights violations, but pointedly ignores the Zionist regime's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory and its commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity against the Palestinian people. Opponents of the Zionist regime's crimes should register their strong opposition to the U.S. enabling of the Zionist regime's oppression of Palestinians, both to their Congress members and the White House. As long as the U.S. regime receives no significant pushback, it will continue to facilitate the Zionist regime's illegal occupation and violate the human rights of the Palestinian people. People can also join the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement to end international support for the Zionist regime's oppression of Palestinians and pressure the fabricated regime of Israel to comply with international law. According to Middle East Monitor, almost 200 Palestinian and international organizations representing civil society have called on the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, ICC, Karim Khan, to investigate the allegations of war crimes committed by the Zionist regime against Palestinians. Wafa has reported. The resident of the Assembly of States Parties to International Criminal Court, Sylvia Fernandez do Gourmandi, was included in the memorandum submitted to the court. The signatories called for public condemnation of the Zionist regime's designation of Palestinian civil society organizations as terrorist organizations and urged the Israeli regime to reverse it. They also demanded that the crimes committed by the occupation regime during its unjustified military attack on Gaza Strip in August 2022 be included in the ongoing investigation into the situation in Palestine. Moreover, they stressed the need to speed up the investigation, which should include crimes against humanity such as apartheid and persecution, as well as the need to issue proactive statements to prevent Israeli regime actions that could contribute to the continuation of such crimes. The groups added that all of the crimes committed in Palestine, including persecuting Palestinian organizations, should be investigated by the ICC according to Article 9 of the Rome Statute.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, and he was the ninth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was brought up in the house of Nubuwa, Prophethood, and Imamat, a house by which Allah had honored the Muslims all across the world. And so Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam grew up in the shade of that honored and noble house, while he received high ideals, morals, values, knowledge, and wisdom from his father, the eighth divinely appointed Imam, who shed rays of light from his great soul unto Imam al-Jawad. Imam al-Jawad's father, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Rida alayhi salam, himself had undertaken the upbringing, the nurturing, the education of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. And so we find that Imam al-Rida alayhi salam took Imam al-Jawad with him wherever he went and fed him with his own hands. A divinely appointed Imam, nurtured and educated by a divinely appointed Imam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam, the ninth divinely appointed Imam. We find, dear friends, that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam emphasized the point about akhlaq, morals and ethics, and especially those morals and ethics and behaviors which are encouraged and firmly rooted in Islam. As we had said in previous programs, the environment in which Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam lived in was an environment that was faced with moral degradation and moral corruption. This too was because the Abbasid governmental establishment itself was full of moral degradation and moral corruption. And so this moral corruption seeped into the rest of society, causing damage and harm to the fundamental spirit of the Muslims. One of the things that we might be faced with in the present day and in this modern life, in this technological age, which is full of machinery and technology, but is bereft of spirituality, is this idea that some of us might not feel content or satisfied with our lives, or even worse, we might not have this contentedness or this contentment or this satisfaction as regards to the Almighty Allah. And of course, as we had said in one of our previous programs, if we are not content with the Almighty Allah and we are not content with our lives, this leads to negative things such as depression or anxiety or frustration, lack of control, and many other negative things. When speaking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, in response to a question where somebody asked him how one can be content with the Almighty Allah, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam responded that there are three things that take one towards the contentment of Allah. One is asking Allah for forgiveness often. Two is to be lenient. And three is to give charity. In our previous programs, we spoke about the first two, and so in this one, we want to talk about the last one. That is to give charity. Sometimes we mistakenly believe that contentment, satisfaction, Ridayat, which is known in Farsi and the Persian language. This contentment comes about through money, wealth, position, status. When in reality, this is the farthest from the truth. Wealth and money and status and position and power, materialistic things and the materialistic world in general, will never bring about satisfaction and contentment. Because the world is a mirage. The closer you get to it, the more you realize that it was not real. And not only the more you realize that it was not real, it is furthermore like the water of the ocean, which has salt in it. The more you drink, the thirstier you become. The thirstier you become, the more you drink, until eventually you go mad and delirious. Now, interestingly, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam here brings us an opposite thing, that if we want to be satisfied and content, do not amass wealth, do not hoard up wealth, Do not continue running after this materialistic world. Not only will you never attain it, but it will never satisfy you as well. But he gives us this beautiful divine opposite prescription. The divinely appointed Imam says that if we want to be content in life, if we want to be satisfied in life, and if we want to have this good relationship with the Almighty Allah, where we are content with the Almighty Allah, then we should give charity. There are so many beautiful hidden benefits of giving charity. Not only does it purify us, and it helps us to detach ourselves from the materialistic world, but charity purifies our wealth, it purifies our being, and of course it helps the ones that are in need, the downtrodden, the oppressed, the poor. And of course when we help the poor, this will help to elevate our society and the status of society in general. And this purification of ourselves, this purification of our wealth, and this detachment from the materialistic world, of course, leads towards the contentment and the satisfaction as regards to our lives and as regards to the Almighty Allah. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam.
Parts of Ziyarah Text of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
As-salamu alayka ayyuha an-nur as-safi. As-salamu alayka ayyuha al-badr al-talim.
Peace be upon you, O shining light. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Ja'far, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
in the limelight.
There are reports that CIA-backed units killed hundreds of Afghan civilians in brutal night raids. According to reports, Zero units backed by the US made virtually no effort to distinguish non-combatants and killed with total impunity. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Without citing ProPublica wrote in this regard, in 2019, reporter Lindsay Billing returned to Afghanistan to research the murders of her mother and sister nearly 30 years earlier. Instead, in the country's remote reaches, she stumbled upon the CIA-backed Zero units who conducted night raids, quick, brutal operations designed to have resounding psychological impacts while ostensibly removing high-priority enemy targets. So, Billing's attempt to catalogue the scale of civilian deaths left behind by just one of four Zero units, known as the Zero Two, over a four-year period. The resulting report represents an effort no one else has done or will ever be able to do again. Here is what she found. At least 452 civilians were killed in 107 raids. This number is almost certainly an undercount. While some raids did result in the capture or death of known militants, others killed bystanders or appeared to target people for no clear reason. A troubling number of raids appear to have relied on faulty intelligence by the CIA and other U.S. intelligence gathering services. Two Afghan Zero Unit troops describe raids they were sent on in which they said their targets were chosen by the United States. The former head of Afghanistan's intelligence agency acknowledged that the units were getting it wrong at times and killing civilians. He oversaw the Zero units during a crucial period and agreed that no one paid a consequence for those failed raids. The Afghan soldiers weren't alone on the raids. U.S. Special Operations Forces soldiers working with the CIA often joined them. The Afghan soldiers Billing spoke to said they were typically accompanied on raids by at least 10 U.S. Special Operations Forces soldiers. These deaths happened at our hands. I have participated in many raids, one of the Afghans said, adding, and there have been hundreds of raids where someone is killed and they are not Taliban or ISIS, and where no militants are present at all. Military planners baked potential collateral damage into the pre-raid calculus. How many women, children, non-combatants were at risk if the raid went awry, according to one U.S. Army Ranger Billing spoke to. Those forecasts were often widely off, he said, yet no one seemed to really care. He told Billing that night raids were a better option than air strikes, but acknowledged that the raids risked creating new insurgent recruits. You go on night raids, make more enemies, then you gotta go on more night raids for just some of the enemies you now have to kill, he said. Because the Zero units operated under a CIA program, their actions were part of a classified war, with the lines of accountability so obscured that no one had to answer for operations that went wrong. And U.S. responsibility for the raids was quietly muddied by a legal loophole that allows the CIA and any U.S. soldiers lent to the agency for their operations to act without the same level of oversight as the American military. and congressional aides and former Intelligence Committee staffers said they don't believe Congress was getting a complete picture of the CIA's overseas operations. Lawyers representing whistleblowers said there is ample motivation to downplay to Congress the number of civilians killed or injured in such operations. By the time reports get to congressional oversight committees, one lawyer said, they are undercounting deaths and overstating accuracy. U.S. military and intelligence agencies have long relied on night raids by forces like the 02 unit to fight insurgencies around the globe. The strategy has again and again drawn outrage for its reliance on sometimes flawed intelligence and civilian death count. In 1967, the CIA's Phoenix program famously used kill capture raids against the Viet Cong insurgency in South Vietnam, creating an intense public blowback. Despite the program's ignominious reputation, a 1971 Pentagon study found only 3% of those killed or captured were full-or probationary Viet Cong members above the district level. It appears to have served as a blueprint for future night raid operations.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC.
Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful. This is about greeting the people of the graves. You know, one of the virtues in Islam, or one of the traits of the believers, according to the Quran and the Hadith, is the remembrance of death. Remembrance of death is very important. It has a very great effect on a person, and you know, helps him in his, avoiding sins, and you know, staying on the right path. Islamic cities were built in such a way that facilitated this remembrance. Now, if you have a chance to, a lot of people don't live in Islamic countries, but you know, if you have a chance to, you know, visit Islamic cities, you can see this very clearly, that we see graveyards are, you know, located everywhere in the city. Placed in the outskirts of the city or far away from the people's eyes, like they are in, you know, Western countries and in cities in the West and stuff. And you know, this is primarily because, according to Islam, Islam wants people to constantly remember, you know, that they are going to die. This world is very transitory. We will not remain here forever. In this way, people can prepare for their transition from this world to the hereafter. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, when people pass by graves, the graveyard, they should say the following: "Peace be upon you, O people of the graves. You preceded us, and we are following behind you." Meaning, you died, we will also die one day, and we will meet you by Allah's will. "As for your houses, they have already found new tenants." You know, the wealth that you accumulated in the form of houses, those houses, now somebody else lives in them. You, once upon a time, you toiled and you worked so hard, you know, to buy a house so that you could live in it, only to die and pass it over to somebody else, right? Another allusion to the transitory nature of this world. "Your spouses have remarried. You made such great effort to, you know, find a spouse and marry them. those same spouses, they could have remarried and found another spouse. Your wealth has been distributed. Your wealth has been distributed. The wealth you accumulated has distributed amongst your inheritors. These are the news we have. So what news have you for us? The Imam then continued and said, if they were to answer, they would say, we found God-wariness to be the best provision. وَجَدْنَا تَقْوَى خَيْرَ زَادٍ. Taqwa, or the fear of Allah, you know, and the fear of, you know, His power and His anger, this is the best provision for the grave and for the journey in the hereafter.